The recording that you're about to listen to is a talk from the City Bible Forum. We would appreciate you respecting our copyright by not making copies of this talk or altering the content in any way. We hope that you find the material beneficial. If you would like more information on the City Bible Forum, you can visit us on the web at citybibleforum.org.
Just a few weeks ago, I thought I'd start a new family tradition. I took the wife and kids to Adelaide Oval, to watch the Adelaide Crows play. And at first it was a lot of fun. We cheered our team on, booed the umpire, booed Collingwood. But after a while, we started losing, and we started to lose really badly. And at the end of the game, my boys were very, very sad. And so we all thought, well, let's not do that again. So it's a new family tradition that lasted all of one game. Because in life, it's very important that we pick the winners from the losers. When we choose where to work, we're trying to choose a growing company or sector. We don't want to work in a fading company or sector. When we invest our money, we look for growth. We don't want to lose our money. But what about with us? On who we choose to be. What's my worldview going to be? What's my faith? Which God should I pray to? Well, right now, probably most of us think, well, whatever it is, it certainly shouldn't be being a Christian. Because right now, being a Christian is a joke. It's a Halloween costume. It's the punchline to the jokes from comedians. You end up being a punching bag on Q&A. Why would I want to be a Christian? Just a few weeks ago, I was an outpatient in a local hospital, and the doctor asked me what I did for work, and I said, well, I'm a full-time paid professional Christian minister. And he went really quiet, so things were awkward. And for something to say, he said, well, I guess that explains the Bible verse on your T-shirt. And I thought, yeah, I guess it does. And a little bit later, he starts asking me, so which Bible college did you go to? And then I said, well, you seem to know a bit about Bible colleges. Do you go to a church yourself? He goes, yes, I do. And then I asked, are you a Christian? He said, yes, I am. And so here was a Bible-believing, church-attending, committed Christian. Even he didn't know how to say he was a Christian to a full-time paid professional Christian minister in public. And that's our question today. How can we navigate our post-faith world? How can I be a person of faith in public? Because right now it seems so hard. And to answer that, today we're looking at the story of Daniel in Daniel chapter 6. And in this story, we meet Daniel. Verse 1, it pleased Darius to appoint 120 satraps, so they're like mayors, to rule throughout the kingdom, with three administrators over them, one of whom was Daniel. Now, the satraps were made accountable to them, Daniel, so that the king might not suffer loss. Now, Daniel so distinguished himself among the administrators and the satraps by his exceptional qualities that the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. At this, the administrators and the satraps tried to find grounds for charges against Daniel in his conduct of government affairs, but they were unable to do so. They could find no corruption in Daniel because he was trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent. We meet Daniel. And Daniel's like that upstart, talented, new employee who's more gifted than you are. Now your job is under threat. Daniel's like that loyal company man in middle management. He takes orders and he gives orders. Or maybe he's the Asian model minority myth. He works hard, he stays out of trouble. Or maybe he's like that Asian who's hit the bamboo ceiling. He's climbed the ladder, but he can only go so high because he just doesn't have the old boys' network. But we find out Daniel is a man of deep personal faith, and his opponents will use this against him. They conspire to pass a law where it's illegal for Daniel to pray in the privacy of his own home. But Daniel still prays, and he's discovered, he's found out, he's punished, he's thrown into the lion's den, but God saves him. What can we learn from this story? Well, we need to know what sort of story we're listening to in the first place. Many years ago, I took my wife to watch Scream, the premiere of Scream, the horror movie. And I started watching, I thought, oh, this is so boring, it's predictable, it's cliche, the acting's cheesy, the lines are horrible, I've worked out who the killer is already. So I said to my wife, come on, let's get out of here. So we walked out of the movie. It's the first time and only time I've ever walked out in the middle of a movie. So the next day the reviews come out, I thought, okay, this will be good. Let's see how they pan the movie. The reviews were glowing. They loved it. They said this was so entertaining. And I thought, what is going on? And that's when I found out the movie was a comedy. It was a parody of the horror movie genre. I thought it was a horror, scary movie. It was a comedy made, designed to make me laugh. And Daniel 6 is the same. My Old Testament teacher, Kirk Paston, points out there are enough clues in this that this is a comedy designed to make you laugh rather than a horror movie designed to scare you. So where is the comedy? We find in two places. The people who play politics. Daniel's opponents. Verse 6. So these administrators and satraps went as a group to the king and said, may King Darius live forever. Verse 7, the royal administrators, prefects, satraps, advisors and governors have all agreed that the king should issue an edict and enforce the decree that anyone who prays to any god or human being during the next 30 days except to you, your majesty, shall be thrown into the lion's den. Verse 11, then these men went as a group and found Daniel praying and asked God for help. Verse 15, then the men went as a group to King Darius and said to him, remember, Majesty, that according to the law, no decree or edict that the king issues can be changed. They're made fun of because they're like the Keystone Cops going everywhere, me, 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 as a group to the king, me, 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 as a group to see Daniel praying, me, 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 as a group to King Darius. They're like minions, and there are 120 of them going like a flock of sheep, bang, 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 bang. And they're so controlled by their politics. They're so blandly uniform. It's like when you go to the primary school and they do that clap, 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 clap to control the crowd. That's what's happened to these guys. And the story makes fun of the people in power, the person in power, King Darius himself. Verse 14, when the king heard this, he was greatly distressed. Verse 15, oh, remember, your majesty, that according to the law of the Medes and Persians, no decree or edict that the king issues can be changed. Verse 18, then the king returned to his palace and spent the night without eating, without any entertainment. He could not sleep. King Darius, the most powerful man of the most powerful empire on the planet, Persia, is helpless. He can't even sleep. In the TV show The Sopranos, we meet Tony Soprano, the most powerful man in the mafia. But at home, he can't control his teenage daughter, he can't control his mother, and he can't control his wife. He's powerless at home. I have a spare room in my house, and I had visions of turning it into a den, a man cave, where I could be the man in the house. But this is what the spare room looks like these days. It's just full of kids' toys. I'm helpless to even set up the home how I want it to be set up. And King Darius finds out that even if you're the most powerful man on the planet, laws and politics get in your way and you can't even get done what you want to get done. And you end up looking like a fool and people make fun of you. So what can we learn from Daniel today? How can I be a person of faith navigating this post-faith world? So I'm going to give us six tools, six lessons that we can learn from Daniel. So lesson number one. There are three spaces of freedom. As people of faith, we need to have freedom to be people of faith in three spaces of our lives. First space is the private space, privacy of our own home. Second space is freedom of assembly. We should be able to meet with people of the same beliefs and practices. But there's a third space, a public space, where we have to meet with people with different faiths, beliefs and practices. So let's see how this works. In the privacy of my own home, I'm a lactose intolerant Asian. 4 out of 5 Asians are lactose intolerant, which shows there's a human species. We were not meant to drink from the milk of a cow. So in the privacy of my own home, there'll be no cheese or dairy products. And then I can form a freedom of assembly. I can form a club of lactose intolerant Asians, where I meet with other Asians who are lactose intolerant. Now, if you want to eat cheese, fine, there's a cheese club for you. If you're Swiss, there's a Swiss club for you. But here it's for Asians who are lactose intolerant. But in the public space, in the school cafeteria, I have to share this space with everyone of all dietary practices and beliefs. So you'll have your gluten-free, your vegetarians, your meat eaters, your cheese eaters, and your lactose-free Asians. That's how it works. I can't coerce my diet upon them, but they can't coerce my diet upon me. In the privacy of my own home, my family watches AFL every Friday night. Then we form a club where we play AFL. If you want to play soccer, fine, but there's a club for you there. If you want to play frisbee, there's a frisbee club there. But this is for AFL people. We play the AFL law, codes and practices. But then in the public space, in a council park, we have to share this space with frisbee, football, rugby and AFL. So in the privacy of my own home, I believe Jesus is Lord. Then I meet with other Christians who also believe Jesus is Lord. You don't have to share that belief, but there'll be a club or church or religion for you. But here, it's for people of same beliefs and practices. But in the public space, I have to share this space with people of different beliefs, faiths and practices. And two things apply here. As a Christian, I can't coerce my belief upon them. But they can't ask me to not be a person of faith in the public space. I can't stop being lactose intolerant in the public space. I can't stop being Asian in the public space. I can't stop being a person of faith. It's a personal faith, but it's not just a private faith, it's also a public faith. Now, what we see in the book of Daniel is all of these spaces get threatened. So in the very first week, we looked at Daniel chapter 1, and this was threatened. Their Jewish identity was threatened. And they had to find a way to maintain their Jewish identity by eating their own food and drinking their own wine. Last week, we saw that this space was threatened because in the public space, Daniel's three friends were forced to bow down and worship an idol that they did not believe was God. So they refused to do that. And now in Daniel chapter 6, today, we see that this space is threatened. Daniel was told he can't pray to his God in the privacy of his own home. So as people of faith, we need the freedom to have the freedom for conscience in all three spaces. Tool number two, understand that there's a spectrum of ways to engage the post-faith world. And here I'm learning this from Andrew Cameron, who teaches ethics in his book, Joined Up Life. He said there's a spectrum where we can choose to cooperate, subvert, whistleblow, or separate. So as a Christian doctor working in a public hospital, I can cooperate. I do what you tell me to do. Or I can choose to subvert. I do what you tell me to do, but for different reasons. You want to cut the hospital budget. I'm going to do it because I want to love and care for the patients. So I subvert. Or I could whistleblow. I could call the hospital out. Hey, we're cutting some ethical corners here just to balance the budget. I will call you out. Or I can separate and say, I choose not to work here anymore. I can't work here anymore. And we see examples in the Bible. Joseph in Egypt cooperates. He's the prime minister. He does what he's told by Pharaoh. I think Daniel and his three friends in Daniel chapter 1 subvert. They do what they're told to do, but they've got their own little thing going on the side to maintain their Jewish identity. I think today in Daniel 6, we're seeing Daniel whistleblowing. He's calling, like the unjust laws are discovered because of Daniel. And in Daniel chapter 3, where they refuse to bow down and worship in public, that's Daniel's three friends separating. They're withdrawing at that moment. And what that means for us as Christians, let's say you're a person of faith, and you work for a bank, and the bank says, today's going to be purple shirt day. We want you to wear a purple shirt on purple shirt day. You could choose to cooperate. You know what? I will wear a purple shirt on purple shirt day because I too agree with inclusion. Or you could subvert. I will wear the purple shirt. But I really think we should include faith under the diversity and inclusion umbrella. Not just morality and practices, but faith should belong under an umbrella, and that's why I'm wearing the purple shirt. We can whistleblow and say, you know what, this isn't about inclusion. This is an ideology that's driving this. Or you could separate and say, I can't work here anymore. I will not wear the purple shirt. So we have to use wisdom to work out what best fits the situation we're in. Number three, let your wisdom shine. And this is a theme that runs through Joseph and Daniel and the three friends. So verse 3, now Daniel so distinguished himself among the administrators and the satraps by his exceptional qualities that the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. Daniel, because of his fear of the Lord, has a wisdom. He's in rhythm with God the Creator and the world around him, that he just has exceptional qualities. He shines. And hundreds of years later, Jesus makes this promise to his followers. So this comes now in Luke, hundreds of years later. Jesus speaking, they will hand you over to authorities and you will bear testimony to me. But don't worry beforehand how you defend yourselves, for I will give you words to say and I will give you wisdom. You will have a way of living that just shines. Number four, be the calm, non-anxious presence. As a father of three boys, I go to a lot of parenting seminars, and often they say this, as a parent, your job is basically just be the calm, non-anxious presence. So when everything goes wrong, be the calm, non-anxious presence. You could be the anxious presence. Ah, what have you done? You spilt the milk. Now we'll all starve. What has happened? Or you could be the calm absence. Oh, whatever. So you're just laissez-faire parenting. No, be the calm, non-anxious presence. This might be a teachable moment. And we see this with Daniel in the story. Everyone else is not calm. They're anxious. So the enemies of Daniel, they're the anxious busyness. The king is the anxious helplessness. But Daniel, he is in control. And he's a foreshadow of Jesus. Jesus, at his trial, everyone else was out of control. The crowd's out of control. Pilate's out of control. But Jesus is the only one in control. He's the calm, non-anxious presence. And here in the story of Daniel, everyone else is out of control. Daniel's the one in control. He's the calm, non-anxious presence. Number five, work for the good of the country. Don't turn it into a culture wars, us versus them sort of thing. And we see this throughout the book of Daniel. Daniel and his three friends are always trying to work for the good of the nation and the king. And we see this in this story here, where after Daniel's thrown into the lion's den and King Darius comes the next morning, checks out on him, Daniel yells out to him, King Darius, may you live forever. He prays a blessing on the king. He worked for the good of the country. So as Christians, how does this work? Well, as Christians, we can belong anywhere on this spectrum. We can see culture, our world is good, or we can see culture, our world as bad. And there's another spectrum. We can say, you know what, I won't change culture. There's nothing I can do. It's irredeemable. Or we can say, you know what, I will change culture for good. I see opportunities and not just threats. So we put these together. We have four choices. We're not four places that we can exist upon. If we go up here, where we see culture is good, but you know what, there's not much I can do to make a difference. Here we have a sacred secular divide, where in the privacy of my own home, I'm a follower of Jesus, but in public, I just work, and I'm just a good worker. But really, I have a private, public, sacred, secular divide. Here we say, you know what, there's not much I can do, and culture is bad anyway. Here we separate and we withdraw. We hope to live a countercultural life that people notice. And I think that's what Daniel and his three friends did in chapter 3, where they refused to bow down to the image. If we go over here, we see culture is good and I can make a difference. I'll change culture for the good. Here we're engaging in our world. We're being relevant and we're demonstrating that we are relevant. And I think an example would be Daniel chapter 1, where they engage in the world, they learn from the best of the Babylonian teachers. Another example would be Joseph, the prime minister of Egypt. And our final quadrant is where I can make a difference, but this world is pretty bad, but I can make a difference. And here we participate, we get involved, we become culture producers, hoping to make a difference. And Daniel chapter 4, which we didn't look at, I think Daniel's very involved there. But today we looked at Daniel chapter 6. And I think Daniel's trying to make a difference. And also Queen Esther, in her story in Persia, for such a moment like this, God has put me here and I can and I will make a difference. Finally, number 6. Trust God's bigger story. Sometimes all we see is where we are. But if you just zoom back, we can see the bigger story. Verse 10. When Daniel learnt that the decree had been published, he went home to his upstairs room where the windows opened toward Jerusalem. And three times a day he prayed, giving thanks to his God just as he had done before. As Christians, often we focus on this bit. Whoa, how good is Daniel praying three times a day? But we miss this bit where he's actually facing Jerusalem. He's zooming back and seeing the bigger picture of God's story of salvation. These days, everyone has a big screen TV. When I used to share an apartment with three other guys, we had a 30-centimetre TV. And if we wanted a big screen, we just sat and we would, oh, that's what we used to do. And we used to have state of origin parties with 40 friends coming. We always had to sit really close. But, you know, the problem with sitting really, really close is all you see are coloured dots. You do have to come back before you can see the big picture. And that's the problem. All we do is focus on where we are. We just get noise and chaos. If we zoom back, we see, no, this is part of God's bigger story. And that's what Daniel does. Where he is right now in Babylon and Persia seems chaos and noise, but he knows, because he trusts God's promises, that this is just a small part of the bigger story from God, where one day the people of God will be rescued and be returned to Jerusalem, where one day God will send his Messiah, the Son of God, Jesus, to Jerusalem, where one day this Messiah will die on a cross and rise from the dead in Jerusalem. And one day the whole world gets a chance to be the people of God, starting in Jerusalem. So where we are right now, things seem out of control. We're in Australia, we're post-Christendom, we're post-faith. It's just noise and chaos. But the bigger picture is this, and that's why Daniel ends the way he does. Even the king, Darius, says this, "I issue a decree that in every part of my kingdom, people must fear and reverence the God of Daniel, Daniel's God, because he is the living God, and he endures forever. His kingdom will not be destroyed. His dominion will never end." As you've heard, I've got three boys, and as a father, my dread is whenever they go to children's birthday parties. Because whenever they go to children's birthday parties, they get fed with lollies, and they come back on a sugar buzz. A sugar high. And as a father, I know that sugar buzz only lasts 1 hour before they crash. And kingdoms are the same. They come rushing in and they come rushing out. Cultural trends are the same. They come rushing in and they come rushing out. I'm not that old, but in my lifetime, I've seen three superpowers come and go. When I was in primary school, I got told that the UK, that was a superpower. And we had world maps where all the Commonwealth countries were coloured in pink. And we were told the sun will never set on the British Empire. What? It came and it went. And, you know, it got replaced by the USA. And I knew USA had become the next superpower when... Many years ago, I was in Europe, and you get maps. You got the map in Japanese, they had the Japanese flag on it. You got the map in German, it had the German flag on it. When you went for the map in English, it had the USA flag on it, not the Union Jack anymore. And now, even in the USA, if you read their media, they're thinking their time has gone, and maybe there's a new superpower coming. Superpowers come, and they go. Cultural trends come, and they go. And so as God's people, God has placed us here for a reason, to make a difference, to work for the good of the nation, yes, to let his wisdom shine, but also to know that our citizenship belongs to a kingdom that will be here forever, and we're always part of the bigger story of God.
What do you mean by culture is, of the world is good and culture is bad? Is that like they're willing to change, or do you mean like,
yeah, so part of what I hinted at when we looked at Daniel chapter 1, that as Christians we believe in the doctrine of common grace, meaning God's goodness is everywhere. It's not just restricted to his own people, so there's goodness everywhere. Doctrine of general revelation, meaning God's truth is everywhere. And also every human being is in the image of God, so somehow everyone is imaging God as well. So somehow in every culture, every tradition, every belief, no matter how strange or foreign, there'll be goodness, truth, beauty and wisdom there, even for Christians to discover and somehow hear the voice of God in there. So culture is good, but at the same time as human beings, as Christians we also believe we have a fallenness, a brokenness, a sinfulness, a way of suppressing truth or running away from truth. So in every culture, including Christian cultures, there'll be something bad that we need to recognise and humbly repent from as well.
Public sphere, I guess as Christians we're called to like evangelise. How do you navigate that in the public sphere?
Yeah, the question, how do you navigate evangelism in a public sphere? Because Jesus gives these follows, you know, a few commands. One is, you know, go, you know, tell people about me, make disciples, tell them the good news. So I think the two things, one is the golden rule is do unto others as you want them to do unto you. So evangelize the same way you want to be evangelized. So, you know, if a Muslim wants you to become a Muslim, how would you want this Muslim to tell you about their faith? Well, do it the same way. And two, what is your motive? So you're doing it out of love because you've discovered something good. So as long as your motive is good and do unto others as you would want them to do unto you.
Looking at the grid, the different ways to respond, are there times recently where you've seen Christians, the followers of Jesus, respond in a way that you thought was in the wrong quadrant? Like, that's not the best way to respond to the situation that they're facing.
Yeah, so fascinating. Like that quadrant shows how theologically and biblically there's a time and space for everything. But then what is a time and space for everything? That's a wisdom question. And that's why I find Andrew Cameron's spectrum really helpful. You're going to need wisdom to work out what the right time or what the right thing to do is. And that's why I love that verse in Proverbs, answer a fool according to their folly. Don't answer a fool according to their folly. Sometimes there's a time to do this. Sometimes the wiser thing is to do the opposite. And we see that with Jesus. Sometimes he answers a question. Sometimes he answers with a question himself. So I think just a wisdom. So I'm not going to call out names, but I just think, yeah, we just need God's wisdom. And that's why Jesus says, I'll give you words and wisdom. So it's not just what to say, but how to say it.
The recording that you have just listened to is from the City Bible Forum. For more information about City Bible Forum events in your city, or to order other talks, please visit citybibleforum.org.